Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, reaching the end of the first week that includes June. It is the minute past the hour or so on this, the third day of June 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And if you want to participate in the real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room, just go on over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name, pick yourself out a password, and pray to God you're not trying to use Java on a Mac. Okay? Okie dokie. You'll be right in there alongside Anatole and Jug of Punch, Labor Man and Little Gray, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, though a third stage guild navigator, has decided that discretion is the better part of valor, and chosen not to fold space, and is instead in Skype command in cool, air-conditioned Northern California comfort. I trust that longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Lottie will be along in fairly short order, and other members of the room will as well. We don't stand on ceremony. Folks wander by when they're good and damn ready. And it is, of course, Friday on the front porch on the Horn. Yep. That means that here in about 57 minutes and change time, we will be firing up the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, also moderated by Sparky, something that we've been doing for years on end now. And, if you've never participated, you need to send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk. SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk on Skype. Include a message that says Friday on the front porch or the Horn or something like that. That way Sparky will know you are not a bot and you are also not seeking to share your massive Nigerian husband's legacy. Mm-hmm. Yes. Just do that, and then Sparky will provide you with the breadcrumb trail, and you will be participating in Friday on the Front Porch before you even know it. Mm-hmm. Hey, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes. Little Gray in the chat room asking, what is the name of the feller whom is addressing us with such flawless elocutory acumen? Yeah. Thank you for the reminder, Little Gray. Much obliged, but I am, and it is, and this is, and we are, right. We've got a fundraising goal this evening to get us into the weekend and not send us into Moran Monday this coming June the 6th with a hole to dig out of. We've got a fundraising goal of $310, and that. Thank you very kindly, Anatole. That just got reduced to $260. Thank you very, very kindly, Anatole. Very kindly indeed. So you've gotten us started. Thank you very much. $260, that's 1 at 260, 2 at 130, 4 at 65, 8 at 3250. 16 at 16 and a quarter. Oh, I don't think we've ever had that one before, 16 at 16 and a quarter. But anyway, we got $260 to raise this evening to stay at, to avoid a more in Monday hole and to allow some early bill paying to take place. Not to mention perhaps even, you know, food eating. Who knows? Okay, so if you want to participate in helping keep the horn on the air, we happy few, because there are a whole lot more horn listeners than there are horn contributors. All you need to do is go to headonradionetwork.com and click on the tab Contribute. That's the PayPal interface. Fill out the requisite fields. You can leave the field blank about what you do alongside, when you're partnered up with Joe Friday at the LAPD and how much you do it for and all of that kind of stuff. Just get to the next screen. It's all about just getting to the next screen. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, you can always mail your contribution, and Boss Man Wayne loves that because it means that he doesn't have to wear his spider-proof gloves when he goes to the mailbox. All he has to take is the axe handle to fight off the occasional Klansman because, you know, the United Parcel Service is more than happy to do business with the Klan. I didn't know the United Parcel Service, UPS, I didn't know that they had a soft spot for right-wing terrorist organizations, domestic terrorist organizations, but, oh well, one man's pajamas is another man's bedsheet and hood, right? But the mailing address for checks and money orders is The Horn. That's the, you make it payable, too. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. So now we've got all the housekeeping out of the way, right? Right, good. So we can now get into the heart of the matter, as it were. And I've been of multiple minds in trying to decide which direction to go in. Today in poison water, or today in racism. I kind of leaned toward today in water, and we got 3 hours of radio with which to work here. We can probably work it all in, don't you suspect? I do. If we think back into the dim mists of the past, and by that I mean last Monday, you might recall that I mentioned a little something-something going on in Peru. Not Peru, Indiana, daggummit. No, the country, Peru. Down the sort of like a miniature California down the west coast, and not that miniature really when you get right down to it, down the west coast of South America, including portions of the Amazon basin to the east of the Andes Mountains. Now, as anyone who has studied the history of the conquest and pillage perpetrated against the indigenous peoples who live there by a fellow of the name Francisco Pizarro, you know that there's a long history of gold in them thar hills. Well, somehow or another, the Spanish conquerors, killers, poisoners, rapists, and marauders in general, didn't manage to get it all. No. There's still some gold there. And dating back to last week, there's a 60-day state of emergency in place in a pretty vast and remote area of the Amazon jungle in Peru. Why? Well, because there's a boatload of mercury poisoning going on there. Now, who in the world would perpetrate mercury poisoning in such a magnificent, tropical, pristine environment? Capitalists, that's who. Especially amateur capitalists, itinerant capitalists, hopeful capitalists. The entrepreneurs. Yeah, that's the problem with the French language. They don't have a word for entrepreneur, said Dim Leader several years ago, and somehow I still can't forget it. Now, illegal gold mining is taking place in the area, and 41% of the population of Madre de Dios is being exposed to the mercury. So are a whole bunch of fish, little birdies, that kind of thing. The rivers are being polluted with the stuff. It's there close to the border with Brazil. Mercury, of course, is used in the mining of gold. And the illegal gold miners use the mercury to get the gold to let loose of the ore rock. And then when they're done, they just kind of dump it all into the rivers, which eventually join together and become the Amazon. Because it's a big river, it can take some pollution, right? Can't it? No, it can't. The photo that accompanies the story that was at VOA shows, it's a file photo showing Manuel Espinosa, who holds his four-month-old son as he takes a break from mining gold in La Pampa, located in the Madre de Dios region of Peru, in May of 2014. Where it is that Manuel Espinosa is doing his gold mining certainly doesn't... it looks rather of a mess. Water, who needs it? I mean, water-based life forms, So And just looking at the photograph here of Manuel Espinosa, I'm guessing that Manuel Espinosa is the only Spanish thing about him. Or Portuguese. I'm guessing his forebears have been there in those hills and hollers. They got hollers in Peru. Come on. I'm guessing they've been there for his ancestors for 5, 10, 20,000 years or so. Jeebus. Somehow or another, they managed to successfully live on this planet without mercury or illegal gold mining, but in a world that is awash in rampant capitalism, not so much. Maybe it kind of looks like they're taking entire mountains down. Oh, shut up, Bob. Getting in the way of money-making there. So there's that, and then there's an area that I know a little bit more about. Mm-hmm. It's right disturbing. And oddly enough, this isn't mercury. No. Reuters has the story. The West Morgan East Lawrence Water Authority has issued a warning to folks who live in the western part of Morgan County, Alabama, and the eastern part of Lawrence County, Alabama. And, well, don't drink the water. Not just don't drink with it, don't cook with it. I'd suggest probably don't bathe in it either. Don't wash with it. Don't brush your teeth with it. Don't bathe your dog in it. Don't do much of anything with it because it's poison. Now, this, now I know this area. This is kind of within the general geographic area of my old stomping grounds. You know, you go to Decatur, Alabama, if you want the famous white barbecue chicken there at Big Bob Gibson's. My, it's tasty. Well, you know, when it's not made with poisonous water. Yeah. Decatur's the county seat of Morgan County. Moulton is the county seat of Lawrence County. Back on May the 19th, the EPA issued an advisory. And in that advisory, they lowered the level deemed safe for some compounds known as PFOA and PFOS in drinking water. It's not like gold. There aren't deposits of PFOA and PFOS and STFU and WTF that are just sitting there in ore pockets under the earth. These are chemical compounds that have been invented by better living through chemistry. What do you need it for? Well, you need it for non-stick cookware. Can we take a moment to talk about non-stick cookware? Man, it sure did seem like something when Teflon came out, and then even later on, you got your Tefal and your Silverstone, and of course you couldn't heat it. You couldn't run it up to high on the stove. And you couldn't use metal utensils in these pans because the stuff is fairly fragile and it would stop being all non-sticky. And it enabled the usage of lighter metals like, say, aluminum instead of, you know, your steels, your copper, and your iron. And America, and I suppose significant portions of the world, simply flocked to the stuff. You will notice, however, that none of that crap is ever used, to the best of my knowledge, in professional kitchens. Just turn on the Food Network someday. See if you can find Rachel Ray, if she can tear herself away from her billion-dollar empire now. See if you can find Rachel Ray whooping up a mess of God only knows what in a Tefal pan. You know. And now we've got ceramics. They're the next step. But we manufactured a ton of nonstick cookware. And of course, Teflon has other uses. I know. But here's the problem. It's also used for waterproofing clothing. It's used as a carpet sealant. It's used in firefighting foams. Here's the punchline to the story. The Alabama Department of Environmental Management is monitoring the situation, which means ignoring it entirely. What happens if you consume too much PFOA and too much PFOS? I mean, because if it's benign and it doesn't do anything, it really doesn't matter how much of it's in the water now, does it? Well, it matters. Because just as too much lead in water can lead to developmental delay and inability to learn and basically brain ruining. Too much PFOA and PFOS, well, they can result in developmental deficiencies that include, but are not limited to, skeletal variations Any medical types want to explain to me what skeletal variations are, pretty please? Or low birth weights. And those things can happen in either precious little fetuses or babies that are breastfeeding. Yeah, and there's all those heathen, filthy, non-Christian mothers out there wanting to breastfeed in public, and they're probably just poisoning their children. They don't need to display themselves, like flaunt their breastises like that. They need to stick a baby bottle full of industrial baby formula in the baby's mouth, and that way it won't get loaded up with PFOA and PFOS. At most, it'll get loaded up with melamine, because the goddamn formula might have been, you know, produced in China, where they don't give a good goddamn what goes in the food. Now, where cookware is concerned, I just saw a remark from Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Cast iron is the best. It lasts forever. I'm not so sure about the forever part, Steve, but we have several pieces of what we refer to hereabouts as hillbilly Teflon in the house, and some of it is getting up next door to 150 years old. And you know what? Using that stuff will keep you young, because it'll keep you strong, because it's heavier than hell. But Steve in Georgistan is right, because properly seasoned and properly maintained and not washed with soap, iron skillets, iron pots, iron Dutch ovens, not that kind of Dutch oven, damn it, will last a very, very long time. And they are, and you can, really, short of a temperature that would actually melt iron, it doesn't matter if you turn the damn thing up to high. It's going to do what a pot does. You know, you want to low and slow, simmer, cool, great. But you want to flash fry, cast iron doesn't mind. Folks, and by folks, I mean people, and by people, I mean...
Corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Human beings, my friend.
Yeah, right. Thank you, Willard. Are upset about the warning having been issued. Because there wasn't any warning before May the 19th, because the Environmental Protection Agency, job-killing regulators, had a higher standard for PFOA and PFOS. But then they did some more science-y stuff, and they found out that doing the science-y things that it's really, 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 really not good for people. Because in addition to those skeletal variations and low birth weights, some of the other things that come from consumption of PFOA and PFOS, which is it brings nothing to the taste bud party at all in food. Cancer, liver and thyroid damage, problems with the immune system. All of this coming from the EPA's advisory of May 19th. Head of the Water Authority, the general manager, a fellow named Don Sims, who seemed to be trying to act with an abundance of caution. Being Talibama, this is surprising. He said the warning has gone out, but he also didn't say how much PFOA and PFOS was found in the water of that particular water system, the West Morgan East Lawrence Water Authority. All he would say is that the level that was there could be potentially dangerous. And that's warning enough for me. I imagine it was probably warning enough for a whole bunch of people who live in the and consume water from the West Morgan East Limestone Water Authority. Where the hell did it come from? Because after all, like I said, it doesn't exist in the earth. You don't mine for it. It came from 3M. also known as Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing, 3M Company, as well as some other companies, too. There's still lots of chemical companies up and down the Tennessee River. It's a big river, lots of water in it. Hell, there's a great big nuclear reactor sits right by the Tennessee River. And lately, it's been so damn warm in the summer down there that the Tennessee River itself has proven to be too warm to cool the water that surrounds the reactor core of the Browns Ferry nuclear reactor. But, you know, hey, so what? That same water authority, apparently the people who work for it don't have much regard for themselves because they've sued 3M and some other companies, claiming that the Tennessee River was polluted by them with stuff, including PFOS, that can be found in the drinking water of the customers of the West Morgan East Lawrence Water Authority. 3M has responded by saying, "By God, this is baseless, and what we do with PFOS and PFOA is totally legal." I'm familiar with that argument because when we complain about, say, birth defects in babies who are conceived and carried to term and inside mommies who live near mountaintop removal sites and wind up being born with things like respiratory birth defects, and we pointed out the coal industry up here says, "By God, there's nothing to it. It ain't real. And even if it was, everything we're doing is perfectly legal because profits, because Merca." The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever in the universe. Amen. Under God. Got it? The West Morgan East Lawrence Water Authority is desperately trying to get installed and generally in place and functioning a temporary filter to remove the chemicals from the water. The permanent system to keep people from drinking PFOA and PFOS is supposed to be completed by 2019. Drinking water for 100,000 people comes from that water system. It's about a third of the people that were poisoned in Charleston, West Virginia a few years back in the Freedom disaster, when Freedom just dumped out in excess of 10,000 gallons of Freedom dumped into the Elk River and went right into the West Virginia American Water Company's intakes and was then shared out to, again, 300,000 human beings. And as we discussed last night, not even 1% of the poisoned 300,000 people could be bothered to show up and demand that the people in the government do the right thing and keep them from being poisoned. So we've got another experiment going. Well, we got a couple of experiments going on. We've got 100 unwitting volunteers participating in a human research trial on the effects of PFOA and PFOS on people who had been consuming it a hell of a long time before May the 19th, by the way. And we'll wait 10, 15, 20 years till they start going to the doctor and the doctors start saying things like, "Well, you better sit down." "No, I hate to tell you this, but, you got cancer." "It's about stage, 15 and 7/8, and you're not going to be around for a long time. Where did it come from?" "Well, we really don't know. It's God's will. That's what it is. God's will for you to have cancer. We got a lot of drugs we can put you on. It's going to make you feel terrible, and you're probably going to die anyway. Praise Jesus." There. So will 1%, will 1,000 people out of 100,000 surround the 3M plant there along the Tennessee River and demand that they stop poisoning them? Will they? Come on. It's Talabama. No fucking way. Ain't gonna happen. Now there might be a class action lawsuit. The The court system of Alabama will do everything in its power to prevent judgment from being rendered against 3M, because that kills jobs, you understand. Merkel. Yeah, and there's one more little fun part that goes with this story. The people who are unhappy, I mean, there are some people. I don't want to create the impression that the folks being poisoned in Alabama are just taking this lying down. Last October, the Water Authority itself filed a lawsuit against 3M, as we mentioned. Okay? So we've got that much. But, well, I would imagine somewhere along the way, that there might be a lawsuit. No, I don't mean a lawsuit by the poisoned people. I mean the company turning around and suing the people who were poisoned for complaining about being poisoned. Because, see, that's going on down a little ways south in Alabama. Yeah, I think we talked about that. But, yeah, never mind. All right. Cooking suggestion from Jay Cruzen. If you want nonstick, buy a green pan. I love mine. Leave anything you want caked on it for a week, and you can still clean it with water and a sponge. That sounds fun. That's the ceramic-coated pan that I was talking about, isn't it? Brother Usher Steve up in New York City says, I'm feeling silly after a horrible week. God's will? What about God's won't? Yeah, see, there's not a lot of God's won't. But then again, oh, never mind. Steve also noted, he said, I've had the week from hell. The only thing I don't like about Friday on the front porch is that I won't get to hear the horn tomorrow and Sunday. 12 years of reruns, Steve. Meanwhile, out San Diego way, from Scott in San Diego, and of course Punky the Cockatiel. Punky probably hit send with his little kneeless, you know, claw. Cockatiels don't have knees, do they? I honestly don't know. I never asked. Scott says, under the subject line, Teflon and birds, I don't know about the more modern incarnations of nonstick cookware chemistry, but Teflon is dangerous to use if you live with a bird. In fact, using it in close proximity to them can actually prove fatal. As for the rest of us, it also sounds like pretty nasty stuff. So, Peru... one more fun thing about Lawrence County, Alabama, just in case you... I mean, it's a quiet, kind of sleepy little place. The northern boundary of it is the south side of the Tennessee River. It's a very poor county, a lot of those in Alabama. But guess what it's got underneath it? Tar sands. You may recall Snork last night saying, we're finding out there's just oil all over the place. One of those places it's all over is down deep under Lawrence County, Alabama. And a couple of years ago, when the boom was going hard, they were going great guns. You know, the prosperity that's going to come to North Alabama. By the way, note to journalists writing stories about this area: do not call it Northern Alabama. Call it North Alabama. It just is. And maybe that's because a lot of people who weren't particularly fond of the Confederacy came from that. Oh, hell yeah, that's North Alabama. You'll even find a reference to the untrustworthiness of North Alabamians in Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. Yep. No, tar sands. Yeah, oh yeah. And, you know, sooner or later, we probably will turn Lawrence County, Alabama, into a freaking moonscape, so somebody can make a gazillion dollars forcing filthy toxic goo out of the ground. For those of you wondering, Jason kindly provides a translation of PFOA for us via Skype. Perfluorooctanoic acid. I read that on the fly. Perfluorooctanoic acid, rock stable, lingers in the environment for about a gazillion years. How nice. Martha in Florida writes, PFOEs and PFOOAs. 20 years from now, when those folks show up at their docks with cancer, the medical community will blame their lifestyle choices. And that's the chief problem with disease research. They never start with the cause. They're more concerned with treatment because profits. Oh, and just FYI, newborns have been found to already have 200 chemicals in their umbilical cord blood, getting an early start on better living through chemistry, you know? We're going to capitalism our way right off of this planet, aren't we? Hey, how about a bomb train update? This, courtesy of Sparky. Oh, and what a great place for a bomb train derailment. No, really. This is freaking awesome. I mean, this is special. I mean, this isn't some bomb train derailment out in the middle of God's little nowhere, North Dakota, or some already toxic rail bed in West Virginia. No, hell no. This here would be your multi-car bomb train derailment in the Columbia River Gorge near Mosier, Oregon. Yeah. Massive plume of black smoke. And once again, people are asking the question, is this a real smart thing to be sending this filthy goo on trains through the Pacific Northwest, through the magnificent Columbia Gorge? To which the oil industry responds, well, hell, if you'd just let us build a fucking pipeline, we wouldn't have to now, would we? Because everything is presented as some sort of goddamn false binary whereby we can send it by pipeline or we can send it by train. It's kind of like the drone wars. We can either send 100,000 people in and get a whole bunch of them killed, or we can kill the bad guys with drones. Mind our own business is never considered part of one of the choices. Just like leave it in the ground is never considered to be one of the choices. Because, I mean, you can't make big old capitalist profits by leaving poisons in the ground now, can you? And yes, even though we're told that the Bakken shale operations of North Dakota are in a state of near collapse, just like mountaintop removal in West Virginia, it's not like they've stopped doing it. They've just scaled back. 11 cars from a 96-car Union Pacific train derailed west west of Mosier, Oregon today. About 12:20 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. That'd be 3:20 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. At least one of the cars caught on fire and released oil, but railroad spokesman Aaron Hunt said no one was injured. Well, that's because there's hardly anybody on the train. But no one was injured. Also fails to take account of the injury, because some degree of injury takes place, a little bit, a lot, who knows, by breathing the smoke from that, you know, burning filth, burning hydrocarbon filth. No, the train originated in Newtown, North Dakota. They blew up the old town. And was moving Bakken crude to the U.S. Oil and Refinery Company refinery in Tacoma, Washington. That, according to company spokeswoman Marcia Nielsen. And all of the rail cars were coiled, insulated CPC 1232 models. Best in the business. Meanwhile, Jennifer Flint, who's a spokeswoman for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, said, "We don't know whether there's any environmental damage, including whether there's spillage to the Columbia. We don't know." Yeah, you do. No, really, Jennifer, you do. You know. Because, and y'all can call me out. Tell me if I'm wrong. When you blow up a giant tanker car full of hydrocarbon, poisonous, toxic filth, and send a giant plume of black smoke into the sky, I mean, tell me, gravity being gravity, particle, you know, we're talking a little particulate matter and everything, but do the laws of gravity just kind of, we just flip the gravity, the gravity's no longer in effect, and it just floats away up into space. And somewhere along the way, maybe a molecule will land on Norblap 12. You know, I do like to think about the Norblapians listening to the program going, "How does he know? Hi, Norblap. Matter. Same to you." But no, really, there's environmental harm. Don't say that, Jennifer. There's environmental harm. Because that shit is going to land somewhere on some place and probably on somebody. Yeah, maybe they'll breathe some of it. Yummy lung food. Oh, it just gets better. Arlene Burns, mayor of Mosier, Oregon, population 440, said that the cars derailed about 20 feet from the city's sewage plant. Oh, snork. Arlene Burns added, "You know, we've been saying for a long time that it's not fair for trains with toxic loads to come into our towns near our gorge. We don't have the capacity to fight these fires." Or, Ms. Burns, if I might suggest, it's not fair for them to run those trains through your town because you don't have the capacity to sacrifice the human being. You don't have the right. It sounds like she's trying hard. Her heart's in the right place. But do you think if you had, and how much does it cost to run an election for 440 people anyway? I mean, you could kind of do it as a show of hands in the high school gymnasium, couldn't you? Could you get all 440 residents of Mosier, Oregon, into the high school gym and say, "Everybody in favor of having bomb trains roll through town every so often, and one of them blows up once in a while, maybe kills somebody or certainly poisons somebody. All in favor," and all the hands stay down. "Everybody in favor of telling these miserable bastards they can't do it anymore," and 440 hands go up in the air. And then you look at them and go, "Tough titty." Because capitalism. Because money. Because
corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Human beings, my friend.
Thanks again, Willard. He likes to remind us of that. And all of this is because of the goddess of irony. Because a few days from now, in Wasco County, Oregon, the planning department is going to hold a public hearing with the Union Pacific Railroad and its consultants, CH2M Hill. And the purpose of the public hearing is because Union Pacific and CH2M Hill want to expand the existing tracks on either side of Mosier. Arlene Burns, the mayor of Mosier, is trying to put the best face on it she can. She says, at least it's not a windy day and it's not August and the ground isn't brittle and dry. But still, a quarter of an acre of nearby land got burnt. Yep. Interstate I-84 westbound got shut down for a while, about a 27-mile stretch, just to make sure. The Mosier Community School was evacuated. There were reports of about 20-foot-high flames near the vicinity of the school. Also near some homes, which are near the school. The Columbia Gorge. Aren't there some references? Pardon my sinuses. Aren't there some references in the journals of Lewis and Clark? About the magnificence of the Columbia Gorge. Meanwhile, yes, there are. And it must have been, Jesus, it must have been. Well, Lewis and Clark had never seen anything like it, nor any of the Corps of Discovery. But, well, they'll manage to get the fire put out. The Portland Airport Fire and Rescue is sending a specialized fire truck that has about 1,300 gallons of fire suppression foam and a five-person crew to assist in putting out the flames. We kind of just let it burn out when our bomb train went off here in West Virginia. There wasn't much you could do. No. But wait, didn't I read something earlier in the story coming out of Alabama about how PFOA and PFOS are used in firefighting stuff? That'll be great in the Columbia River. You know, you can either ship Bakken crude on bomb trains or pipelines out to the refinery in Tacoma, or you can freeze to death in the dark, you damn tree huggers. America, America, man sheds his waste on thee and hides the pines with billboard signs. From sea to oily sea. Little Gray in the chat room noting Warren Buffett owns all those lines now. He ain't writing a check. We've got a great group if you want to join in the chat room. Good evening to Anatole and Devin and Jug of Punch and Jules and Laborman and Little Gray and R.L. Smith and Snork and Steve from Georgia Stan and Stockton Larry and Tim from L.A. And yes, Lottie's there and Sparky's there. And I am told by Tim from L.A. that it is a balmy 104 degrees Fahrenheit in L.A. Well, hey. You're only off by about 53 degrees from the temperature in certain parts of India. Uh-huh. Oh, but since we're going to talk about pollution, Let's take a quick look at this. Because it's, well, I mean, understand, you know, I warn you, this is going to be painful to behold. Kind of odd in that for a change, it doesn't, involve police, you know, at least on the front end. No. This happened in the New York City area. And it's a question of justice. Some teenagers were, you know, hanging out. Yeah. There were some black teenagers hanging out and some white teenagers hanging out. And the white, they got into some kind of an argument over God knows what. I mean, they're teenagers. And the white kids went away, got in the car and left. But then they came back, and of course they were screaming racist epithets. At the black kids. And they began to chase him, them. Yeah, this is, I mean, this really happened. And it's a special kind of heartbreak. Sixteen-year-old kid. Can you tell I hate this story? Story out of the New York Daily News of Dacian McKenzie, 16 years old. The white kids screamed as they chased Dacian and his friends away. They screamed, "I'm going to shoot you, nigger." Another one of the white kids hollered, "I got a gun." Dacian McKenzie had gone to hang out with buddies. The kids were in cars with Pennsylvania plates. As he ran away in fear for his life, Dacian McKenzie collapsed. A former NYPD officer, Diane Fatigati, found him laying on the ground. She tried to revive him. She tried to keep him going until the ambulance could arrive, but she couldn't. Dacian McKenzie died. It's hot outside. His mama said Dacian ordinarily carried an inhaler with him, but he had forgotten it that day. The day he found himself running for his life from a group of angry white kids. His mother, Tisha Richardson, said she'd like to have something resembling justice. Former NYPD officer Fatagatti said, to me, it's murder. They were chasing him. That's a crime. You're hunting them because they're black. You're calling them nigger. And an investigation has been opened. And hopefully something resembling justice will be done, but it will not be the full measure of justice. Because recall that Dacian McKenzie, 16 years old, died of an asthma attack on a hot day in New York. The NYPD was unable to keep the lid on this case because of former Officer Fatagatti coming forward. In the initial report, there was no mention of race in any way having anything to do with the altercation. It's just a kid dying of an asthma attack. But why did the young man have asthma? Care to guess? You probably don't need to. Where does a lot of the electricity in New York City come from? Yeah. It comes from the burning of coal. What does burning coal do? Puts a lot of particulate matter into the air that on hot days are hell on earth to people with asthma. So in a way, asthma is a disease that, you know, it can occur naturally, I guess. But it does not occur in the numbers that it occurs in modern culture. Because the burning of coal, as well as the incomplete combustion of things like diesel fuel, and there's a lot of diesel fuel-powered vehicles, delivery trucks, semis, things like that in the New York area. Well, it contributes mightily to the asthma epidemic that plagues our country. Jesus, this story is sickening from start to finish, isn't it? Bunch of teenagers, and they say the argument started over a girl. Literally ran a boy to death. And the last words he heard in the short 16 years that he spent on this planet were, "I'm gonna shoot you, nigger." Now, New York has a hate crime statute. Anybody care to explain to me how that ain't one? So that'll close out the filibobster for this Friday on the front porch, the third day of June, 2016. Again, we have $260 to raise this evening. I hope we do. Either by PayPal or by mail, you pick. If you want to participate, again, if you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, both the Horn Malloy Skype chat group works, as does the stress line. You can hear the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. The Horn Malloy Skype chat group can hear you. That number is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. Let's take a break. Fire up the Front Porch conversation. We'll be back. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. I wish that song had not had the relevance that it had. Pink Floyd, of course. On this Friday on the front porch for the third day of June 2016, I'm Bob Kincaid, and let's run over and say good evening to Sparky over in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Hey, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. I had a scare today, though.
What? How?
I was in the bathroom and I heard this wail come out of my wife. And I went back there. I go, "What's the matter?" And she goes, "They preempted my damn show on local television because of the Trump rally." I said, "Okay."
Okay, and we now return you to your previously scheduled Sparky.
Oh, hello, it's Alex. I can barely hear Bob at all, but I hear you, Sparky, perfectly.
Okay. Sorry about that, Alex. Here, let me tweak. Oh, wrong. Any better?
A tiny bit.
Huh.
Well, you're real loud, Alex.
I mean, Sparky,
you know, us New Yorkers, right?
Can you hear?
But there's a difference between both of you when you speak versus Bob. So it's, I don't know what's going on.
I mean, am I okay to you, Sparky?
Yeah, you might check your call quality. The little line down by there by the talk balloon.
Yeah, it's like white. Four lines. No, it's gorgeous.
No, I'm for Alex.
You're coming in fine, Sparky. I mean, you're coming in perfectly, so I don't know why you're different than Bob. I don't know what's going on.
Well, you two are just talking across Skype. I'm something a little more than that.
Yeah, but you're loud. You're blowing my eardrums out.
Oh, shoot. So I don't know how to get Bob in normally. What should I do?
Tone down your microphone. If you can. Call quality. Yeah.
I toned it down, but now I can barely hear you, and I can barely hear Bob.
Oh, your microphone?
I have the mic on now, yeah.
Oh, well, you can adjust it in Skype. That's all I was saying. The four little bars down there by the chip.
In Skype.
Skype message box.
Click it. Message box.
There's four little bars in a circle right next to the thought.
There it is. Okay. And then I just updated the system, so maybe that's the problem. Speaker. No. Microphone?
Yeah, it's a little sliding bar there and slide it down.
Sliding bar.
Blue dot.
Uh-huh. All right. I'm messing with it. Okay.
I think we're just going to
still not.
I'll just forget about it. I'll have to tone my. I'll have to adjust you on my earphones, I guess.
Okay.
When you talk.
Well, just the same. What's on your mind, Alex?
Ooh, I could barely hear you. This is horrible. Let me see. I'm adjusting my computer speakers so I could hear you better, because when I do it on the Skype, it's not helping for some reason. So.
Are you using speakers?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, I'm not using speakers. I mean, I'm using the built-in speakers of my computer, and then I tried to modify it with...
Oh, okay. Just don't worry about it.
I hear you, though.
We usually use headphones.
Oh. Well. It's 115 degrees here, and I'm drinking a lot of alcoholic beverages and staying cool. That's basically my life story today.
Well, it's 105 here.
Whoa.
It's balmy 76 here in the studio.
Well, it's that's my temperature under the AC and the ceiling fan going. But outside, it's hot. and there's a breeze blowing, so it's like a blast furnace, you know, in the man cave with the door open.
So, did you send out the breadcrumb trail this evening, Sparky?
Well, Rick was here first, and then I think he's doing an update because for some reason couldn't answer the call.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't contact.
I'll be back in a minute.
Anybody else?
I'm going to blend something in my blender. I'll be right back.
Margaritaville.
Okay. We got another one joining.
Hey, there. Yeah, there's Jules. I think.
There's a reason I sent you that bomb training story that I knew you'd make something out of it.
Well, you know, it kind of made itself. I mean, there's something about bombs going off in the bomb trains going off in the Columbia Gorge that I don't know. It's unless you're like an oil company executive, that's going to be troubling.
But it looks like it could have been a lot worse. Those other cars don't seem to be leaking. It's just
it could always be a lot worse.
Well, there was no big boom.
Yeah,
is what I'm saying.
Yeah, just one, you know, just one one boom and one big 20-foot, big humongous cloud of black nasty right into the air.
Yeah, because one picture I saw, it wasn't very far. It looked like from a trailer park.
Well, they don't, you know, that's another thing. They don't put mountaintop removal jobs next to mansions, and they don't put them next to. They don't put rail lines next to mansions either.
No, but there's a freeway right next to where that thing derailed. That caused a headache for people, too.
Well, I mean, it's... There's no such thing as a good bomb train explosion.
No. You're right.
I mean, at least...
Hi, I'm back. Hello, everybody.
Oh, so you got a nice frosty margarita in hand now?
Well, actually, you guys, I made a mudslide, a frozen mudslide, which is Bailey's Irish Cream, heavy cream, Kahlua, vodka, and ice blended together.
Whew, my gut would love that.
Wouldn't it now? Mm-mm, yum. Well, it's 115 degrees out there, and... I have to shade. I'm growing some veggies, and they're all wilting in the sun, so I'm shading them all. And I'm staying as cool as I can.
Did you get to see the big fireball over Arizona last night?
They mentioned something about something going on in the sky, but I didn't see it, or I found out about it after the fact. What was it?
It was a little pissant meteor entering the atmosphere and exploding.
I did hear about that horrible thing about that woman who knifed her children in Phoenix and then killed herself and talked about the Lord Jesus.
Ah, you know, every now and then he does that to a woman. He just makes her crazy and makes her knife her kids. And
unbelievable.
But no, there was a meteor that entered the atmosphere and exploded over Arizona last night. It was said to be visible as far east as into New Mexico, and NASA has said that there are probably little bitty pieces of meteor scattered in the desert north of Tucson.
Wow. Didn't they find the remnants of an ancient mummy somewhere in the past week where they found a meteor, like a knife made of a meteor or something? From space in the chest of the cadaver? Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that earlier. I didn't see all the details.
That's pretty wild. But I'm trying to stay as drunk and as high as I can when I'm not working because everything is so overwhelming.
I'll be the last one to criticize that. I can't. I can't work that way. That's not to say I wouldn't like to try, but no one else would enjoy it.
Well, I'm not working, I'm saying. Oh, boy. I'm so worked up lately from what's going on in the world, and you know, And I just, it's hard for me to deal with it. So I rant a lot to people that seem like they are interested in my ranting. And I try to talk to people who feel the same way I do. But I feel like I'm going to implode because it's getting to the tipping point here.
Reaching critical mass in Arizona, Stan, are you?
Well, yeah. I mean, just from all the stuff going on with all the horror in the world and this political stuff, you know, just all the stuff that's happening. I'm feeling like it's hard to man, like you're treading water, you know, psychologically trying to deal. And it's hard to hold on because it's just so horrible, all the stuff that's happening, you know. It's hard to deal with this stuff.
I have no doubt of the truth of that. And I don't think that's just an Arizona thing. It just happens to be brutally hot. And, you know, the heat will do that. You know, the heat will add to the frustration.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, the heat isn't really affecting me so much because if I stay inside and imbibed, it's like I pretend it's not going on out there.
The only thing around here that likes the heat are my tomato plants. They're just loving it.
Are they?
Well, my watermelon loves it, but the cucumber wilts and the cantaloupe are doing well. But the beans and the cucumber need shade.
Well, I don't have a whole lot of shade in my garden area.
Me either. So I have to put. I got this shading material that you get in bulk to put. You know, it's like a shading, kind of. It's like it comes in a roll.
Yeah.
But I've been using bath towels in the interim to go over the fencing that I. You know, I have like these little, you know, wire things that they're on. Well, I put like a. Towels over it in the interim, and now I figured I really needed the shading.
I just found the meteorite dagger story.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it wasn't found in his body. It's the dagger that was found in Tutankhamun's tomb, and it has been confirmed to be meteor iron. There's mudslides involved. But it predates the Egyptian, or what was thought to be the Egyptian use of iron. So it was probably ceremonial and spiritually imbued and endowed and yada, yada, yada. The earliest known ancient Egyptian iron object is a meteorite iron bead from a prehistoric cemetery. So that kind of explains it. So they, you know, they heated it up and they turned it into a knife blade, but they hadn't mastered, you know, the whole mining of iron ore, production of iron kind of thing yet. Still pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it is quite.
Yeah. Hey, Jules.
Hey, how are you tonight, Bob?
Oh, hanging on, hanging in. Okay.
Hanging on, hanging in. Yep, yeah. I understand that. How's your?
Hi, Jules.
Hey, how are you doing tonight, Alex?
You were saying how's your
stomach and stuff been doing?
Innards.
Lately?
Innards.
Your innards.
They're not completely back to a place that we would call happy.
Have you been able to get solids down?
Not a lot.
A nurse, Jules. That's my job.
a lot of broth, a lot of soup. Tried some. Agnes made a pot of beans and. Took a run at them.
Oh, and, wow.
No, a lot of fiber there. Yeah, no, but it worked out well.
Did it?
But no, there's still a good bit of lingering pain. But you know, it's almost getting to the point where it feels like normal. So mostly, I've just been trying to force fluids and you know, watch my blood sugar.
What did you have, Bob? What was your thing? That your gizzard problem?
Innards, Alex, innards.
What was your inner problem?
Well, I'm my innards problem. Birth defect.
What is it specifically?
Well, I mean, there's a birth defect involved, and there's my propensity to produce fats and triglyceride as though my genetics think that I'm still living up somewhere near the Arctic Circle, and it drives my guts crazy from time to time. My pancreas goes wild. My gallbladder goes into overdrive, and everything just goes sideways and is, you know, brutally painful.
Oh.
Didn't you say something about metabolic syndrome?
Yep. That's what they called it.
Oh, that's a precursor. Yeah, that a lot of people have that. It's with the high triglycerides and the blood sugar level, and there's all these different things, and, you know, precursor to diabetes. And
There's nothing precursor about it. It's all tied in together, but I factor in an added bonus of a one in a million birth defect that makes it a real party.
Well, you know, you're gonna have to go on a completely 100% plant-based diet and drink only water and exercise 3 times a week. God, don't you hate that?
I don't know. From the description of his digestive tract, it almost sounds like plant-based is rough on the going.
Oh yeah. Well,
oh no, actually it's supposed to be the best thing for everyone's health.
No, actually when this kicks in, I'm supposed to just not eat anything at all.
Yeah. Kind of sounds like,
oh, you're going on the air diet.
Yeah, yeah, the air, I mean, diet. They call it, oh. No, they call it gut rest.
I mean, a food holiday.
What a perverse word. What a perverse use of that word.
Isn't it now?
Isn't it? Terrible use of that word.
Well, I feel for you, Bob, because a few years ago I had Giardia, and that was pretty outrageous. You know, where the parasites get you and invade your whole GI system. That was pretty bad. I'll never forget that. So.
Now this seems to happen about once a year or so, and it sucks while it does, and then after 3 or 4 weeks of not eating food, things settle down.
That's a horrible thing, because you're like anticipatory, because you know that's something that you have to think about, and then when you're in it, it's a horrible thing.
Oh, I get real cranky when I don't get to eat food, and the thing is, I'm taking my metformin, and so I have to figure out ways to keep my blood sugar up, even though I'm not eating enough to keep my blood sugar up.
Uh oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There are frequently popsicles involved.
Boo.
Which kind of sucks, though, because that winds up being, you know, like $3.50 for one popsicle, because there's no freezer here.
See.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to. We should all do a moratorium on food porn until you're able to eat again.
Oh, no. That's all the vicarious joy I get.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. It's a vicarious pleasure.
Okay, let's be vicarious, one and all.
Yeah, because the other thing, the other thing that gets cut out is, fun things like a nice cold beer on a hot afternoon, which is, you know, my definition of civilization.
That's what sounds like it sucks, really.
Fortunately, you're drinking mudslides, Alex. And that means that, you know, that doesn't really make me want to sit in sackcloth and ashes or anything. Now, if you were sitting there firing up the blender and cranking out frozen Tom Collinses and frozen margaritas and stuff, then there'd be a problem.
I do the frozen margaritas. I'm just in. I wanted a little change out today, you know, for the past couple of days. So, you know.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, you ever done a frozen Tom Collins?
I never did a Tom Collins. What's a Tom Collins?
Well, it's what it boils down to is it's basically gin and lemonade. But you know, you throw some, you get that like you get the really good stuff, the Simply Lemonade in the grocery store, or the Simply Limeade even.
Mm-hmm.
It's just high fructose corn syrup, but it's good lemonade, good limeade. Mix that gin, ice, blender, happy.
And a little slice of lime.
Well, if you're into the garnishes, that I tend not to waste time on the garnishes because that takes time away from the drinking.
That's right. Yum, that sounds delightful.
Oh, they are. It's not for you. I don't know about gin in 115 degrees, but then again, you know, the old English fellows down in the tropics, they seem to like their gin in 100 degrees, so it might work for you. I always think of gin and tonic as an early summer thing. Margaritas, the further you get into summer, long about August, I'll move to mojitos. And then as cool weather comes on, we move back into brown liquor.
You know what I love? And that when it's really cold, although I don't think I'm going to experience that now that I'm in Arizona, but, but if it's really cold, I love Spanish coffee.
And what, pray tell, is that?
What is Spanish coffee? It's coffee, Kahlua, a sugar cube on the bottom, another alcohol in it. I guess
you're decidedly Mexican and not Spanish.
No, and then whipped cream on top.
Oh dear
it's
God!
Very yummy, and it's a very warming drink when it's cold.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd have to put on a skirt to drink one of those.
I think after you drink a couple of those, it doesn't matter what you're wearing.
Exactly.
It's irrelevant. No.
But you know, I've been gifted a couple of times in the last year with some lovely ron de Habana. And that's, you know, that was delightful. The Añejo stuff, you know, just over the rocks.
Oh,
but you know,
the good stuff.
But a good Havana Club with a Coke made with non-high fructose corn syrup, you know, real sugar Coca-Cola, the stuff that comes out of Mexico. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a little squeeze of lime, you know, the classic Cuba Libre, nothing like it.
Cuba Libre. Yeah.
But then again, on dodgy little Sunday mornings, I much prefer to make my Bloody Marys with cheap tequila instead of vodka. I don't much like vodka. There's no there. I think of vodka as needle cleaner.
Ooh. Huh. Interesting. Tequila. I like good tequila. I'm a big tequila aficionado, but tequila changes my personality. Well, it doesn't change my personality. It enhances my personality. So if I have one good drink or two good drinks, the floodgates open and I just, I curse like a sailor. I am outrageous and completely no holes barred. You know, it's all over, you know.
That sounds like any booze to me.
Oh, I can't do tequila. Absolutely can't. I did it once and several times, but I did it once and I did it really bad and it just.
And I'll bet you did it with really bad tequila.
No, I did it with really good tequila, but that was I did it way, way.
Okay. Wait. Quick, Jules. What was the really good tequila?
It was. I don't remember. It's been so long ago. I just don't remember. But it was a really bad thing. But every time I drink tequila now, it makes me really ill. Just a little bit of it makes me really.
There are people out there who think Cuervo is good tequila.
No. It wasn't.
Oh please,
Cuervo. No. But it was top shelf something or another. I mean, it was something else, you know, something top shelf.
Well, the big thing is in the mixing. You pour a lot of sugar on top of a lot of alcohol and drink them. The sugar is going to bring on the hangover. Water, booze, good.
Probably the sugar, but no, it wasn't a hangover. I was deathly ill. I mean, deathly ill.
So you can't drink tequila. That's why they call it tequila.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Tequila.
Well, definitely tequila affects me differently than any other alcohol. So, I mean, I have to be careful. If I have one, a good strong one, good strong one, or two regular ones of a good brand, that's about it. And I get, it affects me in a certain way. And I know that going.
Well,
Marty
is recommending good old reliable vodka, triple sec, and lime juice on the rocks. He says the good old reliable kamikaze. And those will get you where you're going in a hurry.
I like the Herradura, Herradura Silver.
Yeah.
And I like it with fresh ingredients, the fresh lime juice. And I love it with the Cointreau and no salt, of course. And I like it on the rocks. And I love it with, I like it when it's like that, the margaritas. I love making margaritas with like cherry margaritas, where you pit the fresh cherries and you blend.
Once again, too much work.
Mm. Sounds very good.
Well, it's worth it. Come on, Bob.
Labor intensive.
Oh, come on. Sometimes it pays off. You put a little bit of work into something and it pays off big time.
Tim from L.A. says, I recommend Macallan 18-year-old, and I'm down with that recommendation, but that's cold weather liquor. Or moonshine, the one your relatives make.
I've got a couple of cases of wine right now that I haven't touched.
Yeah, I don't drink wine or beer.
I don't drink much beer.
Hearkening back to a famous country song, Ron and Raleigh says, a woman once said to me that she couldn't drink tequila because it made her clothes disappear. And there is that great country song, Tequila Makes Her Clothes Fall Off.
Yeah.
I think
like Bill, meat on the bone, huh, Bob?
No, I think
definitely heard that.
I think Bill Cosby wrote that song.
Oh, good grief!
Oh no, let's not go there.
Tough crowd.
Let's go there.
Tough crowd. Tough crowd.
No, nice.
Jules, you're in Indiana, right?
Yes, I'm in the Hoosier State.
You're in Fort Wayne.
In Fort Wayne.
You're in Fort Wayne?
Yes.
All right, because my husband's from Indiana.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
Yeah, he's a Hoosier.
I'm not a Hoosier, yeah. But I'm in the Hoosier State.
You're in the Hoosier State.
Yes.
Hoosier State.
Hoosier State.
Hoosier Ma, Hoosier Pa.
Yeah.
Where's your ear? Who's ear? Who's ear disease? Who's ear? That's the way I heard it. Who's ear? They used to get into big fights and bite each other's ear off, and they'd go, whose ear is this? That's the way I heard the telled. Yes, believe it or not.
Definitely Indiana stand over there. Yeah, you said, Bob, the other day that California is not Stan yet.
Oh, I have some good news for Californians.
What?
They cut the exit polls out. Well, hopefully they're not going to start barking. But anyway, they are actually going to, there are going to be some exit polls done. And let's see if I can pull this up. It is the, let's see. They are going to be done by, let's see here. They're going to be done, but they're only going to be done in the Los Angeles area and the greater San Francisco Bay area. And they're going to be done by a trust the vote in cooperation with some other entities. They're going to be done with the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism and Election Justice USA, in addition to the Institute for American Democracy and Election Integrity. And what they're going to do is, it's not quite exit polling. They're going to have people outside of the polls, and they're going to have them ask people to re-vote on special software that has been produced specifically for this purpose. And the results are going to be taken to the campaigns that need to have them if there's any kind of discrepancies or anything. And they're going to be reported. They're going to be reported widely. So.
Well, that sounds good, but I'm still feeling depressed about all the other primaries and all the other stuff that has not been fixed. You know, New York, Arizona. I mean, it's just there's so much that has not been done right. So it just seems. I mean, that's good to hear, but it's like there's so much. The damage already done. I wonder.
Well, we voted by mail yesterday. So much of my county, they don't even have precincts anymore. They just mail you the ballots.
And they
They have drop boxes where you, like Oregon, where you can drop them off.
Yeah, in Arizona, and I opted for the early voting by mail. That's an option, and that's what I did. But I think even with that, they screwed around with the people that voted by mail.
And our county clerk's office is going to be open this Saturday for people to vote, too.
And there are going to be quite a few clerk's offices that are going to be open to vote. I know that. I would suggest that people contact their ROVs if they're interested in voting over the weekend. But talk to your the director of your ROV, because I know some of the county offices, the office workers do not necessarily have all the correct information. So,
yeah, you hear Governor Moonbeam is now endorsing Hillary.
Yes.
Yeah, that came out a couple of days ago.
Yeah,
and I'm sorry to take it to politics. I apologize. I know everyone's been so good this week, but I just had to let people know about that. That's really good news.
Bernie was at Chico State last night, 40 miles away from me, but I wasn't going to go down there in this heat.
Big crowd.
That's insane, yeah.
6,000.
Woo!
They had it out on the lawn in front of the Lexan Auditorium, which is a really cool place. It's only a block away from Madison Bear Gardens. I'm sure a bunch of people went over there and come back. And then it's a long lawn that goes the whole street towards way down. He said last night, I listened to part of it, he says, "You way in the back there." Hello. Because they had everybody roped in at a certain area.
Well, at least it wasn't San Jose.
Chico, 6,000.
Wasn't there 20,000 a couple of days ago somewhere? Was that Monterey? Or where was that? 20,000. It was a couple
Oakland.
Of days ago.
Oakland, they had a huge amount of people show up. They were reporting anywhere from 20 to 60,000. Once they counted the people that were outside of the mall area, they estimated it could be up to 60,000. It could be up to 60,000, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And for Trump's thing.
No, that's where my niece goes.
Yeah.
Hey, Tim.
She would know where Lexan Auditorium is, and she probably knows where the Madison Bear Gardens is.
I'm going to go up there in a couple of years, go visit my niece, and go visit Duncan, too.
Anyway, keep saying that.
Anyway, Trump flew into Reading today. That's probably one of his airplane hangar deals.
Oh, they were giving out free water for people who were there.
Well, at this point in time, he's just stirring the pot. You know, he's got the nomination, for God's sakes. There's no real need for him to be doing anything in California. One gets the suspicion that he's just trying to keep people riled up.
Well, I think a lot of people went just to see his plane.
Well, that's not what happened in San Jose last night.
No, but you don't see a 767 land in Reading very often. fact, I don't think anyone's ever landed there. The only thing that's landed there before is President Bush during the fires.
Oh, hey, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, Tim. What's happening?
Getting hot.
What's this about? Is there a pronunciation issue with Marty's kamikaze?
Yes, kamikaze.
Yeah, tell that to a drunk in a bar.
Yeah. Hey, when I'm drunk, I can still say kamikaze. Sake.
Sake or sake? Saki or sake?
Sake.
Sake.
Sake. Sake is S-A-K-I. Sake
is S-A-K-E. Sake to me.
Yeah, sake. Sake to me. Yeah, exactly. So no excuse.
You're too young to remember that.
I heard it.
Laughing.
We watched it regularly in this house.
105 in Reading, huh?
No, I'm not in Reading, Tim. I'm 30 miles south.
Oh, Red Bluff, I mean.
Dead Bluff, we call it.
Dead Bluff.
And it gets to be the hottest place in the nation quite often.
Hotter than Death Valley?
Sometimes it has been in August. In August, damn, when we get a big heat wave.
Damn. Where I'm at, Pomona, where we were 1 degree colder than Baker, which is the border of California and Nevada. They were 105. In Pomona, we were 104 today. Well, I'm staying indoors.
Heat warning all over the West Coast. Clear up into Washington.
Yeah, it's a big warning.
Question for the group. What point is there in showing up and assing around at a Trump rally? Even if you oppose Trump, what point is there?
There is none. Absolutely none. You mean the people that were like throwing eggs and stuff and being absolute bastards?
Was it shown that it was burnt? Did they identify who these people were and who they represented?
I don't care who they were. They were being bastards.
What I'm wondering is, if they're connecting them to Bernie supporters, you know.
Well, you know they were.
I haven't seen a lot of that reported thus far, Alex.
Okay, just wondering.
Well, a lot of them here in California that showed up at rallies are the Mexicans. Mexican and Hispanic people protesting to stand on Mexican.
Well, they probably pissed off at him.
Yeah, and this whole thing situation, there's going to be a lot of things going on all the way down into the.
But don't you suppose that T. Rumpusaurus Rex loves it when this crap breaks out at his events?
Oh yeah,
more media attention, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Charles has popped
everybody.
In.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Rick.
Rick, hello.
Hey, Rick. Hello.
Yeah, we had a new server installed at the office here, and so I had to go offline like at about maybe, I don't know, 3:50 or so. So I missed part of the program. So,
that's what happened to you.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah, well, that happens. A client also called, so I would have had to have absented myself anyway. So at least I got to build some time there, you know.
Well, you're not keeping it in your bathroom, at least.
No. No. Very little gets kept in my bathroom. Oh, jeez. So, yeah, I saw that woman getting egged. That looked pretty nasty.
Well, and then they threw water balloons at her.
Oh, it was horrible.
But, I mean, I guess the guy is just divisive. He just sort of, you know, people kind of go crazy either for him or against him, it seems like, you know? It's a very polarizing figure.
I wouldn't waste my time going to a Trump rally. You know, I would only go to places where there are people where there are people that reflect what I feel, and that causes me to feel excited and to join with others. But, you know, except there was one time in New York City many years ago where they had this anti-choice demonstration. The pro-life, quote-unquote, people said, we're having a big, giant human rosary. We're gonna construct out of human beings. And so, the of course, all of us, the pro-choice people, said, oh, really? So in New York City, that's a bunch of thousands of people. So we, we countered their demonstration. You know, and there was some yelling back and forth. But, of course, we overtook them with the masses of us, you know. But it was very profound, you know, in that situation. But I wouldn't go somewhere specifically, you know, to someone who I knew made me sick and who I despise just to show up and scream or throw something.
Well, what if the KKK was marching down like Fifth Avenue or something? What would you do then? Or
I guess you'd
have Trump shoot him, right?
Well, see, what happens is when folks show up and behave in egregious fashion in opposition to Trump, that's basically providing his right wing white nationalist Klan type followers. That's basically giving them the ladder to crawl up on the cross and scream about how they're being persecuted for their beliefs.
Oh, that's like catnip to them. They love that stuff because then Donald can start tweeting about how, you know, the Mexicans were out, you know, demonstrating against him, and, you know, thank God the police had it under control.
Yeah, and the crazy Bernie people, right?
The Bernie people, yeah, yeah.
Crazy Bernie, right?
Yeah. Well, we're not going to see that debate, unfortunately. I didn't expect that it would ever happen, you know.
I was praying to Jesus for it.
Well, hey, he wasn't listening.
We really
to that stuff.
I guess it came true.
Well, what's the latest in free? What's the latest in free publicity for T-Rump? According to BuzzFeed, he singled out a person of color in his audience, and he said, he's sitting there behaving, and we had protesters inside the arena, and they were dressed in a Ku Klux Klan outfit, okay? And they're running around dressed as Ku Klux Klan. This African-American gets up, and man, he slugged these guys. By that time, their hat was off, but this guy, great guy, I think he was a military guy for a long time, he slugged the guy wearing the Ku Klux Klan outfit. And he said, look at my African-American over here. Look at him. Are you the greatest? You know what I'm talking about. My African-American.
Was he the token one in the crowd? He probably was, huh?
Paid him.
And that's what he said, Sparky, in Reading.
Oh, good gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've read a couple of things he said in Reading. Said if you vote for Clinton, this country's going to die.
If you vote for Bernie.
I was trying to figure out why these animal rights people, why did they try to charge the stage in Oakland and then they did it again in Modesto the other day? What a burn.
Yeah, what was that all about?
He's the only one that has taken any stand on factory and family farms. He's the only one that's taken any that has made any statements on animal rights, period. And that's the reason why they've made a statement at his rallies, is because he's the only one that's made any statements regarding...
And whatever statements he's made are not good enough.
Yeah, they're not good enough. Because he's not stating specifically that he is against any kind of animal usage, or he's not fully for complete animal
sovereignty. He's not for compulsory veganism.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bernie's the problem because he's not for compulsory veganism. Because we'll only be truly happy in America when there are great flocks of chickens. That darken the skies like the passenger pigeon once did, and the hogs will just roam free in the vast arboreal spaces of Merca, and see the thing is the hogs are going to be vegans too. And they'll never, like, you know, chew a deer down to and eat their teeth, too. I mean, no, they're going to be vegan hogs once we turn them out into the wild. And we're going to have happy flocks of free-range chickens. And the cattle will just kind of wander around the countryside, kind of like they do in India. And you know, no one will ever milk them, and no one will ever eat them. And we won't, and you know, I'm no big fan of contained, you know, CAFOs. I despise them. But the other side there, they're not playing, you know, with a full
A lot of people get so, it's an obsession. I mean, I get where they're coming from, and I have understanding. But I think if you take it to the point of obsession, you know, it can be counterproductive. And I think that's where some of these folks are doing, you know, that.
It doesn't take many generations to turn a hog wild.
Hog wild is a phrase for a reason, Sparky.
Hogs are not nice to be around. Trust me.
They're here, right? 20 miles from me, maybe.
Oh my goodness, they are dangerous.
They're all over the foothill country. They're in the Ishii Game Preserve.
Oh my goodness, yeah, they can be very dangerous.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
Yeah.
Turkeys are mean bastards, too.
I thought turkeys got... No, I guess not.
Wild turkeys.
They're good, though.
Wild turkeys fly, but domesticated turkeys don't.
No, they get their wings clipped.
There you go. Hey, Sparky, do these hogs just escape farms and then go wild? Is that what happens? Join herds?
Hog
or what?
Wild.
Yeah, years and years and years ago. We had a friend down the street that he hunted him off of this was in the 60s, Trail 90. My dad had a Toyota Land Cruiser. So he had shot three of them up there, and he got us to come down and to haul them out. We had a motorcycle carrier that fit on the back of the Land Cruiser.
Hmm.
So we carried that up there, and then we worked all day getting them three hogs out of the wildest, rough country you can ever imagine.
Oh, jeez.
The boar had, three, 4-inch tusk on either side coming out.
Wow.
And his head was all scarred up from where he had fights.
Hmm. Wow. So he was like a Trump, as far as a mean son of a bitch, right?
Well, yeah.
Hey, guess what my son and I ordered, Bob?
Oh, what's that?
On our way to the concert, either on the way back or I think it was on the way back from the concert, we ordered hats that are going to say they're going to be red hats, kind of like Trump has, and it's going to be. Making Trump drumpf again, I think they're going to say, or something like that.
Oh, my goodness, really?
So I'm going to wear those around. We're going to wear those around. And
that'll be fun.
So that should be fun. We'll see what kind of reaction we get. But
that will be interesting, quite interesting.
Yeah, people see the hats, the red hats, they'll think, oh, geez, red hats, white lettering. Oh, they're Trump supporters. And then they'll read it and realize, oh, they're not.
Yeah, whoops.
Yeah, I'm scared. I'm with trepidation. I wear my Bernie shirt, and I just ordered, I'm getting my Veterans for Peace shirt with the Martin Luther King quote on the back. Uh-huh. And I'm very scared because in Arizona, Stan, you know, they have the open carry. They're very, and they're very reactionary here, as in other places, but here especially more than any place I've lived. And I'm scared to walk around advertising my Veterans for Peace and Bernie shirt, but I've gone out a couple of times with the Bernie shirt, and the only reaction I had was this young teenage boy who looked at me in the supermarket and went, right on. And I said, that then it's all been worth it. You know, but I feel really it's kind of scary to walk around with any kind of advertisement of anything in certain environments, which is kind of sad because I can't express my feelings without thoughts of physical harm.
That's why you need a gun.
Freedom protection.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Hey, I think Punky's joined us.
Yeah, Punky is here, and I'm half here.
Who's that?
That's Scott in San Diego.
I never met you.
That's okay. Yeah, Scott has Punky, and I have my my girls, my big furry, my big furry girls.
Hi, yeah, Scott. I'm Alex. I never met you. Nice to meet you.
Well, hi, Alex. Nice to be met, and nice to meet you.
Where are you?
I wanted to give you an update on the San Diego TV scene in terms of Bernie commercials.
Oh.
Every day I record off of CBS, The Price is Right. Don't ask me why. I never watch it. I speed through it until they play Plinko, and then I'll watch.
Sorry.
Do what?
Heard a strange squeaking sound.
Oh. No, yeah, that's Punky.
I was putting him in the other room. He's just working every fucking nerve I've got. And I still feel like death on a dog biscuit. But anyway, so the lead-in, before the show started at 10 a.m., Bernie apparently had a spot running. And I think he also had one or two during the body of the show. And he was on, had an ad or two during the local NBC News on the local affiliate. And they were saying that he wasn't going to run a lot of ads. So I think it's encouraging that maybe he's going to do a saturation last minute buy in the weekend leading up to the primary. And let's see, what was the other thing? Oh, he's also on the news last night, the local news. They mentioned that he's coming back to San Diego this weekend. They didn't have the date and time and location last night, and I haven't looked around too much for an update today. But this will be his third visit to San Diego. So that's encouraging. Actually, fourth visit.
I think he's working his way back down south.
Yeah, he was here on March 22nd, and then he was here the last week or 10 days of May. He appeared at two different venues. Mm. So this will be his third visit, but his fourth rally. So that's good.
He worked his way through the Bay Area, come out to Davis, had a rally, and then Modesto, and then he come up to Chico, and now he had one in Fairfield today, and he's doing a thing in Berkeley this afternoon Robert Reich, a private affair thing. Are they going to?
Well, back in the day, and I can't remember, honest to God, whether it was Nixon or Reagan. I think it was Reagan, or it might have been Nixon, but either way, they always made San Diego their last political stop. But, of course, San Diego has changed quite a lot politically, certainly since the era of Nixon and also since the era of Reagan. This used to be a reliably red area, sort of Orange County South, but you can't really say that anymore. There's still pockets of it.
Wasn't there a San Diego newspaper or something that San Diego Union or something endorsed Ronald Reagan instead of Trump, a dead person.
Well, yeah, because the guy who was the publisher of the San Diego Union back in the day, this is long before I got out here, was not the publisher, but the editor or whatever, one of the bigwigs there, was a guy named, I think it was Herb Klein, who was one of Nixon's big supporters, and then later Reagan. But it's no longer a reliably red county, which is encouraging, because I don't think I'd be here otherwise, because I don't like to live in red. I don't know who it was talking about. They're not comfortable wearing their Bernie hat or coat or button or whatever where they live, because it's an unpredictable area in terms of reaction. Well, this is why I don't live in an unpredictable area in terms of reaction. I mean, I guess it's okay to do missionary work in places, but then again, you've got to live there the rest of the time. So that's why I will never live in a red state again.
The one thing I haven't seen this time, primary in my little town, is bumper stickers. No bumper stickers. Just that one idiot had the yellow shoe polish writing on his side of his windows.
Oh, God.
For Trump.
Yeah, I don't see many, but it's funny, in Arizona, I see a lot of American flags flying from cars. I see a lot of church stickers in the back of cars, like the affiliations to churches. But for some reason, I haven't seen a lot of bumper stickers. And when I do see a Bernie sticker somewhere, I always, my heart just skips a beat, you know. But I haven't seen a lot of, you know, bumper stickers and people advertising for everybody. It's kind of interesting.
Well, I think that leads back to the fact that negative reactions will occur in really innocuous and innocent places. And it would be one thing for a person to encounter you on the street wearing a Bernie button and call you everything but a child of God. It's another thing if you've got a Bernie sticker on your car and you're inside the Ralph's or the Vaughn's or whatever, shopping your little butt off.
No, it's not.
You get out and there's a, you know, the car has been keyed or torched or.
Yeah, Scott, that's happened to me in the past.
Yeah.
I was flagged down driving down the road.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the instances of road rage over the simplest things in today's world. I got rid of my car back in 2003. We've got a good bus system, a fairly good bus system, and a pretty good trolley system. And I can get pretty much anywhere I need to be. And if the bus doesn't go there, I find a reasonable facsimile, to go to. I mean, and in terms of the stress and wear and tear on your nerves and the cost of gas and insurance and auto upkeep, hell, it's you know, the downside is it's not as easy. You don't just get up and go. But on the other end, it doesn't work your nerves like driving does. And it's not sure as hell not as dangerous, what with the instances of road rage and madness behind the wheel.
Well, I spent the first 40, well, I didn't learn how to drive until I was 40. So, you know. I've only been driving for how many years? But, yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but I have no choice to drive and living in an environment where there is no good public transportation.
Yeah.
So I'm stuck, unfortunately. But
no, I can understand that. I've lived in a few of those places myself, so I know what you mean.
Yeah, I'm a New York City native, so I never was even inside of a car probably a couple of times until I was about maybe 40.
Well, before I moved out here, everybody said, well, you're going to have to get a car. So I owned a couple of cars during the first few years I was out here. But I thought about it and I said, you know, you're from the East Coast. You know how to use public transportation. There's no stigma attached to it. It's a perfectly reliable way to get around in major metropolitan areas. What do I need the headache for of having a car? You know? And some of these talks with myself can be quite instructive and helpful. So I decided, screw it. I don't need the aggravation.
Yeah. A lot of places are, you know, everything was made years ago. All our living environments were made or car focused. So we don't have environments where they're, it's easy for people. It's not pedestrian friendly. So people are, you know, we were forced to have to go far distances to do things and get things.
And then you get out in these suburban areas, which I, years ago, dubbed them these types of neighborhoods where all the houses look alike and they're all jammed up cheek by jowl You know, I call these places Poltergeist Acres, because if you've ever seen the movie Poltergeist, the locale for that movie was in a neighborhood where it was, you know, little boxes made of ticky-tack, built over, an Indian, a Native American burial ground, which is what caused the spirit to come up through the TV and get the little girl, you know. But anyway, that's my TV update in terms of political ads for the San Diego media market.
Well, I know that Bernie is going to be, I think, at the L.A. Memorial Coliseum tonight, like at 7, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, okay.
I believe
okay.
So, yeah.
So that'll be interesting. That'll be... that's huge. I mean, if he can fill that, geez, that's like, what, 100,000 people, 90,000 people, you know?
Well, you know, it almost also may be somewhat telling that Hillary was off in New Jersey or something the other day, and her people were saying, you know, she wasn't coming back to San Diego, and then or to California, and then she made a mad dash. She was out here yesterday. And in fairness to her, I thought that speech that she did yesterday at Balboa Park, which is a big place here in San Diego, I thought it was quite good.
It was the crowd.
Well, I don't know. I think it was not open to the public. But the point I was going to make was, if you don't see Donald Trump sitting down for the next week or two, it's because she ripped him a brand new asshole. I mean, she turned him every way but loose. So, yeah, in fairness to her, I think she did a hell of a job, because she basically used his own... She did what Edward R. Murrow did to Joseph McCarthy. She used his own words to hang him by his own petard.
Well, nobody has done what she did yesterday since the Johnson-Goldwater campaign. She openly accused him of being willing to start a nuclear war.
Yeah,
I mean, that was the minute I heard that sound clip, I immediately thought of the so-called Daisy ad.
Yeah, that great minds must think alike, because that was my first reaction.
And alongside that, the mockery, you know, because Goldwater's slogan was "In your heart, you know he's right."
Yeah.
and the Johnson people picked up on that and said, "Yeah, in your heart you know he's right, but in your gut you know he's nuts."
Yeah, exactly. There's a speaking of commercials. There's a pretty good website, I believe it's called The Living Room Candidate. And if you look online, you should find it. And basically, it goes back to 52, I think. And it's a collection of TV commercials for presidential candidates. And a couple of weeks ago, when Trump was having rallies and people were demonstrating and things were getting out of hand, my mind immediately flashed to Nixon's ad campaign in 68, where he ran. A lot of people don't remember this, and the irony is so thick you can cut it with a hand-forged axe. But he ran on a policy of law and order. Nixon was going to be the law and order president. And he turned out to be probably one of the most law-breaking presidents.
One of the most vicious crooks to ever inhabit the office.
Exactly. I mean, his attorney general, John Mitchell, called the Watergate scandal the parade of horribles. And that's an apt expression to describe it. But Nixon in 68 ran against a law and order, ran as a law and order candidate. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if some of these demonstrations keep up against Trump, that Trump uses some of that same imagery in some of his political commercials, and they'll only work with certain mindsets, but he knows exactly who to target it to because the guy knows media.
Well, you know, I grew up in New York City and had to deal with Trump and Giuliani through the 80s and 90s, and they were on front page and on the media. These two were 24/7. So I have a history with those two, and yeah. Trump especially, you know. So I've known about him for all my adult life, you know. So by the time by the time he came into the fore, I've already had, you know, 35 years of him, you know. So he's not, you know, nothing he does or says is new to me. But talking about the Hillary Clinton thing and the speech, you know, she might be saying what she said about Trump, but she is also a warmonger who would rather go and nuke Iran. And she's the one responsible for what happened, you know, that she voted yes for the Iraq war and also the Libya situation. So I don't think she has anything to stand on as far as her saying anything bad about Trump, because she is dangerous and scary as far as getting into war and perpetuating all this as well, a nuclear war. So I don't think she is so
yeah,
wonderful.
I don't know. Alex, I'm not going to go that far. I mean, I'll agree with you as far as, you know, Hillary loves her some war, always has, always will. But I don't think she's as I don't think she's as prone to pushing the button as the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini is. It's a thing about temperament, and if you can say anything about her, it is the fact that she is a product of the governmental bureaucracy that she seeks to lead. I don't. You know, she's not running around out there saying, well, I want to, you know, I'll nuke this guy and I'll nuke that guy. Trump is.
Yeah, I didn't really phrase it all that artfully, but my point basically was that in her speech on Thursday here in San Diego, Hillary basically painted Donald Trump, if you saw the movie Dr. Strangelove, as General Jack D. Ripper. You know, mad as a March hare, and you don't know, anything could happen with this guy, I think was what she was saying. Now, she didn't mention anything about herself, so you're absolutely right, Alex. She didn't give her own case in terms of war and madness. But then again, that's not the point of the exercise. It's to make your opponent look bad.
And, yeah, you got it. Yeah, I know where you're coming from.
But yeah, I mean, Trump is too stupid, really, in my estimation, at least his followers are, to be dangerous. But then again, that's what makes him so dangerous, because he will say anything and do anything because he appeals to a particular mindset that facts don't enter into the conversation. Reality doesn't enter into the conversation. And those are good people to have in your corner. And I say good in air quotes, because they're reliable voters. But then again, you know, we all get to live with the consequences.
I think there's too many people in this country that think that people, they judge people by the amount of money they have, and they say, well, this person's very wealthy, so he's a good person. And I just sit back and look at them like, how do you think they got that money? Do you think they got that money by honest means? And, you know, people, it surprises me. It really does.
Well, that's the Christian dominionism mindset, that, you know, money must be good and is a primary evidence of God's love for you. So if you got plenty of money, God couldn't be more thrilled with you. And if you don't, well, there must be something wrong with you. You know, and it stems from the verse in Genesis where God encourages Adam and Eve to take dominion over the earth and be fruitful and multiply. Well, they have fucked earth to a fare thee well. The only commandment they've halfway kept was that be fruitful and multiply part. And we talked about that the other day, the fact that, you know, the population will be soon approaching 8 billion on the planet, and we are not living in a manner that's consistent with it working out for everybody involved.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Did you see that video the liberal redneck put out?
Oh yeah.
About Trump.
Yeah. And how he wouldn't weep if Trump was killed in a tragic hairspray accident. That was a great line.
But he was talking about the people in his town. There used to be a clothing factory there, and then it left like a thief in the night or something like that.
Yeah.
But then how people like in his town think when Trump says we're going to bring the jobs back, they're bringing that clothing factory back or something there to help their poor community out again. It just don't work that way.
Well, no, and it doesn't. And there was another, the guy's doing good work. There was another line in there about, you know, when you live in a town where being the postman's kid means you're rich, you know, that there are problems.
Yeah.
And there was a reference to things like 20% unemployment. I mean, it's smart, funny political commentary. The guy's really good.
Hey,
oh, let me just add something here before we go any further, because I like to when people contribute, I like to acknowledge them on air, and so thanks go out to Charlene and to Jason. Because of them, our fundraising goal is now down to $230 in order not to enter Moran Monday with a hole in the ground. 10 at 23, 23 at 10, etc., etc. So hopefully we will clear that out in the next 43 minutes. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, earlier you all were talking about there was a Bernie rally the other night where some animal rights protesters rose up and caused a little brouhaha. And you went out on a real nice little rant there about compulsory veganism and all that good stuff. But back when Bill was governor of Arkansas, and maybe even before, I know Hillary was on the board of Walmart there in Arkansas. And if my memory serves me, Tyson Poultry Company is also based in Arkansas. Did Hillary have any connection to that company? Does anybody know?
I can't answer that with any degree of authority whatsoever.
I seem to think she may have sat on the board of directors at one time of Tyson. I'm not 100% sure though.
I seem to recall she did.
There's a clip out there of another member of the Walmart board at the same time she was on it, who was railing against labor unions. And all they do is take away money from the people who actually want to work for a living. And she sat there as silent as a graven image and never once spoke up for organized labor while she was on the board at Walmart. Now, somebody want to explain to me again why labor endorses her?
Stupid.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm a union woman, and
I'll give you the answer real quick because it's easy to say, and it's igumfu. Where the leadership of the unions are concerned, igumfu. I got mine. F you.
I know the leadership of my union never came out and endorsed anybody, but local unions have mostly gone for Bernie.
Yeah.
Yeah, the people, like the Nurses United, the nurses on the bus, you've seen them online.
Right.
The red bus that's traversing the country, they're fantastic. But they're Nurses United. They're not that strong California Nurses Union. Then they're going all over. But there's other unions. There are nurses associations that are not unions that are endorsing Hillary. But this is that big, strong union in California of nurses who have been out there protesting for better working conditions, you know, more nurses per patient ratio and all that. Those are the nurses on the bus, and they're all for Bernie.
Yeah.
And CWA will endorse Bernie.
I've never run across any union members that make all this money that people say that they're making and all. I mean,
the rank and file, Charlie. I'm talking about the international presidents who knock down north of $300,000 to $500,000 a year.
I'm just talking about just a regular person that's in a labor union. I mean, you hear about all these people who hear third hand these horror stories about how they don't work and all this, and they're always drunk on the job and all that. And I've actually never seen that. I mean, it just doesn't seem to exist.
Well, now, over the years, I worked under two unions. In the 70s and into the mid 80s, I worked for a couple of the Bell, AT&T operating systems, local operating companies, one in the D.C. area and one in Kansas City, and worked under CWA, Communication Workers of America. And then in the late 80s, I worked into the very early 90s, I worked at a radio station, which was a union shop, which was an after station. And in my estimation, to help you understand it, I didn't catch your name, the guy that asked that question.
That was Charlie.
But the mindset of the union officials, and certainly management, is... you know, if businesses will always pay as little as they can get away with, minimum or slightly above, minimum wage or slightly above, the union, the rank and file, basically, all they're asking for are decent working conditions, fair treatment, and a living wage. And I think it really got underway with Reagan in terms of the union busting. And that son of a bitch, there isn't a place in hell hot enough for Ronald Wilson Reagan. And now that Nancy's gone, she can get an adjoining suite.
Well, I mean, Reagan truly hated unions to the very core of his being.
Yeah, I never had much. I never had Reagan. You could listen very intently to what he said, and then stand back and look at what he did and how he believed, and the two just didn't match. I mean, you know. I used to call him the senile bullshitter. I mean, you know.
Seems to cover the ground pretty well. Hey, Alex, how are the mudslides coming?
She passed out.
Must have stepped away. Make another one.
There's mudslides in Arizona?
What's in a mudslide?
Apparently it's Kahlua and Bailey's and vodka and cream and ice and blender.
Lots of good stuff.
And
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, temperature update. It's 106 degrees outside.
Oh my goodness.
Wonder what it is in the man cave.
I ain't going out there to find out, yeah, yeah. Bob.
Unfreaking bearable.
Chicken.
10% humidity.
Oh, really? Well, that's not bad. When we have heat, it'll be like 100 degrees, and we'll have like 89% humidity with that.
Mm-hmm. That's like Southeast Asia weather there.
And then, so it's like, you know, 120 degrees with the humidity. I mean, it's really...
That's dripping weather.
Yeah.
Back when I was an enthusiastic drinker, and probably drank way too much for my own good, I used to enjoy, every now and again, a Long Island iced tea. And it's one of the most potent drinks.
Oh, yes.
It's basically a shot of all of the white liquors and a shot or two of Coca-Cola served over ice with a lemon wedge.
There's a little bit of sour mix in there, too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably so. And it tastes just like iced tea.
Oh, yeah, I love those. I can handle those.
You can't really drink more than one. And still be an upright, responsible human being. And by upright, I don't mean morally. I mean physically standing upright.
Yeah, non-horizontal.
Well, I remember in 80...
Go ahead, Charlie.
I remember back in 82, there was a friend of mine getting married, and I went to kind of like a party before he got... I don't know if you'd call it a bachelor party or not, but we were all sitting around drinking, and I had no idea what a Long Island iced tea was. And I downed about 7 of them. And the next morning, my hair was hurting.
Oh, yeah, I can do several of them. But
Charlie, I'm surprised you didn't have an out-of-body experience.
Well, I had to lay down on the couch and put my foot on the floor to keep the room from spinning around.
Yeah.
You had 7 iced teas, huh? Wow.
Well, there was that one afternoon in D.C. Agnes is with me, and there's a fun. It's one of the best dive bars in D.C. It's called the Tune In, TUNEIN. It's been there for a bajillion years, and they've got great food, and so. Agnes and I had been pounding the pavement and walking the hallways of Congress. And it was the luncheon hour. See, I'm classy. I say luncheon. And we walked in, and they had some sort of, you know, they had some sort of delicious special. I think as a matter of fact, I had the fish and chips. Can't remember what she had, but. The drink special was, in fact, a Long Island iced tea. And Agnes had not consumed a Long Island iced tea since about 9 months before the birth of our eldest. And that's how our eldest was, you know, conceived. And let me just by way of putting in an unpaid plug... let me suggest that they do not, they do not scrimp at the Tune In. They serve their mixed drinks in 16-ounce pint beer glasses. And she liked that first Long Island iced tea so much, and it went down so quick and so easy and so cold and so delicious, and it was hot outside, and there was a special on, so it was a bargain, that Agnes decided she would have a second. And she did. And, there's no real end to the story except to say that we began walking back down Pennsylvania Avenue, at which point the epiphany struck me that if it would probably be the better part of valor for me to hail a taxi. And I did. And bless her heart, Agnes was laughing and smiling and carrying on, but it just had a lovely afternoon. And I owe it all to a pair of Long Island iced teas at the Tune In on Pennsylvania Avenue in D.C.
I think I remember that place, Bob.
you probably do. I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, it's there's a crew of regulars. There's a bunch of folks that always come in when the Nats are on TV playing baseball. You know, there's a crowd of people for games being played by the Washington Racist Football Club. But it's got all kinds of ambiance, and danged if it wasn't started by a hillbilly, West Virginian. So, you know, that's why.
Well, it's basically a neighborhood bar up on Capitol Hill.
If your neighbors happen to be members of Congress, right?
Yeah, it's right up there on Pennsylvania Avenue within spitting distance of the Capitol.
Oh, it is. It is. It's just a couple of blocks on up. Staggering distance, to say the least. Hey, continuing thanks go out. We're now in a mad sprint to finish off the week. We now have $205 to go, thanks to our dear old buddy, David in South Carolina. Thank you very kindly, David. So $205 to go in 29 minutes.
We can do it.
One hopes.
Yes. If anyone hasn't or has the inclination to donate, you know, you all enjoy the show, and you know, you all enjoy Bob's company in the evening from 6 until 9 Eastern, or
not just mine,
whatever your time is.
Everybody's company. I mean, Jules, without fail, the comments that I see come in always, you know, they're not so much about me as they are the wonderful group of people who form this community. And as noted,
that is we.
As noted, there are a lot more listeners than there are people who keep it going, and that's a fact.
Oh, this is true. Yeah, I know we get a lot of comments in the FYI chat room about the folks that are commenting and that are calling in, and I know there are a lot of comments in the Kincaid chat room that are about the people that have called in, and so the listeners really enjoy the people that are calling in, and so it's really great, and I know folks really enjoy it. So, but they enjoy listening to you too, and I know today during Nicole Sandler's chat, there were folks asking about liberal or progressive channels to listen to, or shows to listen to, and everyone first thing out of everyone's mouth is Bob Kincaid. So,
oh, how nice.
Yeah, and I see that a lot in various areas that I go. So
yeah, I try to do that too. Wherever I can, I say listen to, and then I put all, you know, the horn Bob Kincaid, you know, everybody that I, you know, the four or five people I listen to, I say, and I try to spread the word to every single solitary group and person and everything to let them know.
I, as a public service, I have your moment of metaphysical wisdom or whatever. Sometime, you know, as this political season continues for another, what is it, 5 fucking months?
Yeah, until the next one starts.
Yeah. If the befuddlement and amazement and confusion gets to be too much for you, here's a good way to help keep it straight. Human beings are hardwired to look good and be right by making others bad and wrong. It's part of the human condition, but it shows up in its most aggravated form in the realm of religion and of politics. And a lot of people say, well, you're pointing that out as trying to make people, you know, bad and wrong. No, it's not. It's a public service. That's why I prefaced the word with, you know, with that announcement. Sometimes it's one of the most valuable pieces of information I ever picked up, because it cuts through all the horse shit and gives you the reason behind the behavior and the mindset. And Now, the natural inclination when someone is doing that is to jump into what your hard wiring says to do and to look good and be right by making them bad and wrong. And that's our natural inclination as human beings. The better way is to take a step back, take a deep breath, and understand the dynamic that's being played out before you. And I look at someone like Trump, and I mean, he's the living embodiment of that dynamic. And like I say, it's not to make him bad and wrong. It's just simply to say, you know, he has taken it to an art form.
No, I think that's quite aptly put. But this is a performance art. The denouement to which there's a shitload of people may not survive.
Yeah, well, there is that.
I mean, you know, this is not the Barack Obama can do no wrong program. Because there have been plenty of criticisms that valid criticisms to level over the course of the last 8 years. But he has not been an unmitigated disaster, and one may argue that he might have been a truly great president had he had a Congress to work with. I remember when we used to say that about Bill Clinton, history has that assertion has not survived history, even the short history, since his presidency. But had Obama had a Congress to work with, things might have been considerably different.
Well, yeah,
That having been said, that's all preface. What we're facing now is a shit storm, okay? And, you know, we can bargain, you know, what are the seven stages of grieving? One of them's bargaining.
Denial, right? Denial.
There's denial, there's bargaining.
Acceptance is the last one.
Well, and, you know, to a certain extent, I think acceptance, Alex, is part of this. Because a lot of us have come to the conclusion that that this country is circling the drain, and the question is, you know, with any drain, you can either drain fast or drain slow, and T-Rump is just pulling out the drain altogether and just leaving an open hole. There is no making America great again within his recipe. There is no plausible argument that he would be better than Hillary. Okay? And I don't much like Hillary. But I don't not like her because, you know, Dan Burton shot a watermelon in Indiana to prove that she killed Vince Foster. I don't not much care for her because of any of the horse shit that plagued the Clinton presidency through the 90s. My problems with Hillary Clinton are created by Hillary Clinton. You know, the fact that, because this stuff rubs off, I mean, it matters. She and Bill spend Christmas every goddamn year until he died a couple of years ago. They spent Christmas every year at the gated mansion of Oscar de la Renta in the Dominican Republic, where, you know, perhaps a scant mile from the walls of his goddamn mansion, people were starving. And little children were selling themselves into the sex trade. Okay? And they spent those Christmases there with Mr. and Mrs. Kissinger. And sorry, you will be known by the company you keep.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it reminds me after the 2004 election... after Arnold had told people not to be an economic girly man like that John Kerry. Fuck all if John Kerry didn't go and spend Christmas with Arnold in Sun Valley, Idaho. Now, maybe it's just because I'm a member of the plebs and I don't understand.
There's a lot of people get into politics that have...
But you know, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, you know, he's not just a threat to what this country is. He is a threat to the human species existing on planet Earth, and there ain't no planet B. And the whole point that I was getting to earlier is that, you know, the tepid little things that the Obama administration has done to try to make things not quite as awful. You know, the Clean Power Plan that has caused absolute conniptions in right-wing governor's offices and legislatures all around the country, but amounts to a drop in the bucket in terms of climate. Look, his EPA acted on this PFOA and PFOS stuff in the water in Alabama in the Tennessee River, and they acted slowly, but they acted. Well, you know, when the organizations, the administrations that fall within the executive branch are, you know, what they do is determined by the president. Can you for one moment imagine 4 years of an EPA that is simply fucking muzzled? That for all intents and purposes doesn't exist?
Yeah, I can imagine it. I just don't want to. Because it's pretty goddamned horrible.
Yeah, it's nightmarish. And again, I can't. I mean, if I follow through and I intend to keep my word and vote for Hillary here in West Virginia, it won't matter because she's going to get steamrollered. I mean, she's not even going to be a little electoral greasy spot on the map where West Virginia is concerned. But I'll vote for her. Because I don't, I know enough about American politics to know that third party votes are fucking meaningless. Okay, you know, voting my conscience for Jill Stein in a general election is it's less than meaningless. Because my conscience vote for Jill Stein will not do a goddamn thing for the air that my grandchildren have to breathe or the water that they hope to be able to drink.
Well, the way I described it in programs past, Bob, is a third party vote this time around is like farting against thunder. Yeah, it does make a sound, but it's barely audible, if at all, and in the final analysis, doesn't make a whit of difference. It truly doesn't.
Well, I mean, this is all stuff that's controlled by the Constitution. You know, you want proportional representation, maybe sign on, and I don't mean you, Scott, I'm not bitching at you. But, you know, sign on with those assholes over there with Mark Levin and sign on with those wolf pack loopies and get yourself a constitutional convention brought to you by the Koch brothers and go in there and just say, let's scrap it all. No more president, no more Congress, no more Supreme Court. Let's just put everything inside a parliament and do it the old fashioned way. Because that's the only real way within the constitutional scheme we have, which is first past the post, winner take all, that you're going to get anything like that.
As a good citizen who knows enough to do his duty, part of my obligation, part of the agreement that I sign on to by right of my birth in this country, is to protect my country and its constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And there's no way that you can slice that plays out to a sandwich that that's listed on the menu as voting for Trump. And if that makes me a left-wing radical, then so be it.
Well, I mean, look,
but I'll
at,
be goddamned if I'm going to do or not do something that will enable him in any way to become the chief executive of this nation. There's no way.
And see, one of the things that, I mean, and I'm kind of repeating myself, one of the things that scares the life out of me is that I feel like I've got a pretty good idea of the stupidity of which the American voter is capable. Because I remember 2000, and I remember it way too well. Okay, we all like to talk about Florida. I don't give a good goddamn about Ralph Nader, okay? Ralph Nader did not cost Al Gore the election. There were more votes cast by old Jewish people in Florida for Pat goddamn Buchanan that would have put, that had they voted with their brains, would have pushed Al Gore past George Bush in Florida. There were more than 10,000 registered Democrats who voted for Bush directly. Okay? And in 2016, I don't see that the national IQ has risen appreciably from 2000. And that's why I say, and if I'm wrong, I want to be wrong. I mean, I want to run around and holler, whoo-wee, I was wrong, baby. I was wrong on the day after the November election. And I will if I am. But I can see because like yesterday when she finally, you know, the crowd just, they tittered and they laughed and they clapped a little bit when she said something marginally snarky about Trump. Well, okay, I'm glad she did, but she still doesn't have, she doesn't have that ability. And he just countered by tweeting, yeah, crooked Hillary. And she's going to wear that. She is going to wear that like an albatross around her neck all the way to the election. And we have a choice.
Yeah.
We have a choice. We don't have to nominate somebody who has 25 years worth of negative baggage. And so we can nominate somebody who actually has a considerable lead over Trump in the polls. Or the DNC can pee on their own shoes and all over the rest of us, and you know we'll hope in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up first, and you know maybe Hillary will beat him.
Did you see where Harry Reid is pushing Elizabeth Warren for vice president?
Well, he can push all he wants, but she's in her first term in the Senate, and she wants to have a career, and it would be the end of her career to hitch her star to Hillary Clinton because she would lose every bit of credibility that she has.
Yep.
Now, what I do find interesting is the numbers, depending, of course, on California on Tuesday. The numbers show that she may very well not have enough pledged delegates to get the nomination outright on the first ballot in Philadelphia. And so consequently, you see people out there babbling about the possibility of a Biden nomination. At which point I just put my little head and my little hands and go, oh, no. And it's always presaged with, well, you know, in recent weeks, Joe Biden has said he certainly regrets his decision not to run. But there's no way that the people who supported Bernie are going to go, okay, well, as long as it's not Hillary, okay, we're down with Joe. We'll abandon Bernie, but you know, we're good with Joe. Because that's 1968 all over again, okay? Because you had you had Bobby Kennedy,
Humphrey,
and you had Eugene McCarthy. Going and then Bobby was killed. They go into the convention in Chicago, and Hubert Humphrey had not run in a single primary, and got the nomination against the will of the Democratic rank and file.
Hey, Bob,
how'd that work out?
The plan B in this scenario if it's thrown to the House, okay? And does the Supreme Court have any say in this ultimately? Because they seem to be predominant in the 2000 election. I mean, it's bad enough that you would get a getting the decision thrown to the House of fucking Representatives, but then when you consider...
Well, I mean, you're in November, Scott. I'm still talking about Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. Well,
I'm talking about who gets the nomination now. I need to go and read that again. But you know, if you go back to Burr and Jefferson, that was what, 37 ballots in the House. I mean, the House decides. You know, the Supreme Court came in 2000 because rather than have it be thrown to the House, you know, the Bush people sued and Gore had terrible lawyers and terrible advisors. But it went to the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court was reviewing a decision of the Supreme Court of Florida, which had reviewed a decision of the Circuit Court of Florida.
Well, what I'm asking is, how would an 8-member Supreme Court figure into the scenario if, for some reason, they should be called to hand down a decision? God help us.
Well, tie goes to the winner in the lower court.
Exactly. That's what
But you know, to the extent that there's a liberal wing, you know, the scary possibility there, Scott, is something that we saw in the go ahead and kill the black guy case from Louisiana earlier this week. It was a simple case of a question of potential racism in the trial of the case. The courthouse was still flying the Confederate battle flag at the time the guy was tried. Remember? And he was arguing that the racism tinged the jury verdict. He wasn't saying he didn't do it. He was saying that he didn't deserve to die, and that he probably might have not gotten the death penalty elsewhere in a different county. And the liberal members of the court, you know, Breyer, Ginsburg, Kagan, and Sotomayor. You know, that's the four liberals. And then on the other side, you had the rat, Roberts, Alito, and Thomas. And then you had Kennedy. So they all voted kill the guy. And then the wise Latina and Elena Kagan said, yeah, definitely kill him. And it was a 6-2 decision. Now, can you see one member of the Supreme Court of the so-called liberal branch just knuckling under and go, ah, screw it, let Trump be president, fuck it?
Well, in a 4-4 tie on the Supreme Court, the only way to break that...
The only way to break that is for one of the liberals to knuckle under. Because, the four hardcores ain't gonna. Those are all political animals. Roberts, Alito, Thomas, Kennedy—they will—they'll do what they were put there to do, and they'll vote Republican. Remember, the swing vote in 2000 was Sandra Day O'Connor, because she was a centrist. Thanks, Sandy. Sandy, no. And I'm sorry. I find it entirely too. Too easy to imagine a so-called liberal member of the Supreme Court sticking a shiv between the ribs of the country. You know, in the name of constitutional stability.
Well, the only reason I mentioned Roberts was he seems to be aware of the responsibility of the Chief Justice. And also his place in history in that capacity. And he has sometimes been able to do the right thing. But then again, you could be right. Now, God help us if you are.
Indeed. And that ain't much at all. I mean, that's no help at all, God help us is. Eesh. And, you know, I don't mean to be, I just come across that way sometimes. I don't mean to be such a little ray of freaking sunshine, but it's kind of hard to avoid sometimes. I mean, that Louisiana case really did kind of blow my mind a little bit, that the wise Latina and Elena Kagan would go, ah, kill the black dude. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be an asshole by referring to Sonia Sotomayor as the wise Latina, but that didn't seem like a very wise decision.
Just is that the Bugs Bunny voice?
Hasn't she called herself a wise Latina?
Yeah, yeah. She said that. Yeah, she said she would be good on the Supreme Court because the court needed a wise Latina.
Yeah, well. Yeah, I don't know what happened. Some of those cases, I mean, the Supreme Court's not really not all that liberal, even the liberal judges, you know?
Well, remember the Sweet Granny McCluckey case?
Yeah, right.
Where we're going to protect right. Where we're going to protect a bunch of goddamn religious domestic terrorist assholes and allow them to confront and assault a woman who's just trying to go into a Planned Parenthood clinic for a pap smear. Well, yeah. That was a 9-0 decision by the Supreme Court.
Jeez.
Liberal wing my ass.
Yeah. Yeah, so much for that. Do you have time for a quick concert report?
We got a couple of minutes and $205 to go in fundraising, just saying. Go ahead.
Oh, boy. Well, here's a special promotion, the Paul Simon concert promotion contribution. you have $205. Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, Bob. I'll throw in 50, okay?
Thanks, Rick. Thank you kindly. That was not directed at you, brother.
That's
well,
okay.
Bob, I will throw in 5. I know it's not a lot, but it's what I can do.
Well, that takes us down. That is a lot, Scott. That is a lot.
Well, I love the show, but I'll probably mail it to you.
That's fine. So that's 200. Rick takes us to 150.
Okay. Good. Good. Well, anyway, I went to the Paul Simon show at the Hollywood Bowl on Thursday, or well, actually Wednesday, June 1st, with my son. It was beautiful weather. It just gets so nice and cool in California in the summer nights, you know? And really good show. I mean, you know, he's not the kind of guy that does any hard rock, so people generally weren't standing up and, you know, raising hell that way. But, I mean, it was a really good show. I enjoyed it. And, just before the show started, I had a little edible with me, and so I bit like half of it in half and chewed it, and like nothing was happening after like 40 minutes or so. So I said, "Okay, I'm going to do the other half."
Mistake.
And I mean, I just was so, you know, and it finally hit me like after the concert, you know, and I was with my son, and I was like, you know, I wasn't like staggering, but I mean, it was. It kind of reminded me of that scene, A Thousand Ways to Die in the West, where the guy eats too many mushrooms. I don't know if you guys saw that scene.
Yes.
So, I mean, I was like, oh, I think it lasted. I still felt stoned the next day, like at like,
did you,
I don't know, 4 or 5
drive?
In the afternoon. Huh?
Did you have to drive?
Yeah, I was careful. Yeah. But like four or five in the afternoon, I was still stoned. I don't understand how that can last that long. Is that possible?
Sure.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, it's a different metabolism.
They need to put on the label for edibles, will creep up on you later like cheap Fruit of the Loom shorts.
Oh God.
Jeez.
And you know, and well, from a legal standpoint, the first lawsuit is underway in Colorado now, Rick, on a failure to warn claim.
Oh yeah,
guy lost his shit and killed people.
Yeah, he went psychotic. It caused him to go psychotic, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh hey, before you close the show, I got to tell you this, and I hate to interrupt, but I'm going to be hosting some say next week, our flagship show on FYI Nation. I am hosting the entire week from 9 p.m. until midnight. So I know everyone goes to Malloy, but we do have archives, and I think we're going to be replaying some during the day. So,
excellent.
Come and join me, folks. And I'm going to have some special guests. I know Tara Devlin's going to be with me on Wednesday. So.
Oh, beautiful. She's so much.
It's going to be a great time.
Tara is so much fun, and she's such an angel.
Yeah, she is. She's going to be fun.
All right. So. Thank you, Jules. Time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for participating and joining in the conversation. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to Anatole and Charlene and David and Jason and Rick and Scott. Thank you. We got $150 to cover between now and Monday, and hopefully we will. Thanks to you all for spending your precious finite time engaging in, however you do, in this conversation. It is a profound honor, and I hope you know that. Thanks to our all volunteer staff, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night.